I call to order the House Committee on Business and Labor for February 6, 2015. We have a very nutritious day today. You kind of notice there's a pattern here that we've been doing certain topics, and today we're going to be talking about nutrition services, and some of the bills that are being introduced about nutrition in the schools. What we're going to be doing is today we're not going to be going into a work session. The bills that we've heard, we're actually going to work on those next week with family duties that Representative Springer had. She wanted to be here to vote, so we're just going to be holding that off till next week. But we'll plan to work the bills on Wednesday, February 11th. Okay? We also have... Do you have any vice chairs? One thing we do have, I have one bill. We're going to introduce LC 2393 as a committee bill. And 9323 deals with achievement compacts. And the one thing about this is, why don't you, if you would please introduce the bill?
Do you want to open the work session?
Yes, we're going to open a work session on LC 2393.
Chair Doherty, I move that LC 2393, dated November 10th, 2014, be introduced as a committee bill.
Okay. Representative Reardon moves that LC 2393, dated November 10th, 2014, be introduced as a committee bill. I was going to say, is there any discussion? What this is, as they say, a committee bill is one that you don't have to agree to it. You're not done. But this is a committee bill that will sunset out achievement packs. And achievement packs are what are they called? Achievement
compacts.
Compacts, thank you. The achievement compacts is our schools are supposed to have an achievement compact as to how they are supposed to hit the goals under the OEIB. And so this is the bill that is going forward. We will be having a hearing on it later on. Right now, it's just simply an introduction. So, is there any further discussion? Okay. Seeing none, is there any objection to introduce this as a committee bill? Okay. Seeing none, the motion passes, and LC 2393 is introduced as a committee bill. So we are out of the work session on LC 2393, and we are back into public hearings. What we're going to do is we have five bills to hear today. The first one is a public hearing on House Bill 2661. If you could.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2661 provides that school drills and instruction on safety threats include lockdown procedures.
with that, a Representative Comp can't be here. Do we have anyone else signed up to speak? I can go down and speak in front of you, but I think on this one I'm going to be just giving a few introductory explanations about the bill for Representative Comp. And what this is currently, even though it is not considered instruction time, schools are required to do fire drills, earthquake drills. What other kind of? I think fire.
Containment.
They're supposed to be doing containment drills. The one thing that is not written in law are lockdown procedures. And the unfortunate thing in education today is we now have to have a procedure to lock down the schools when there is either a shooter on the premises or an active shooter in the building. But it is not required. So what we are asking with this bill, and we'll be with this, is that we just add a lockdown procedure in the current law that has it. But part of the discussion that will come up later on is to see whether this is actually considered part of instruction time. And I think the reality is if you ever had it's one thing to have a fire drill in an elementary school and get in and out in 10 minutes. The high school is a little harder. They don't move as fast. And when you've got 2,000 students moving out and then 2,000 moving in. So there will be a point that we will talk about this with instruction time. But all it is the addition in the current statute of lockdown procedures. Okay. We've got no one signed up either for or against this bill. Are there any questions or comments?
Does it apply to lockdown and lock-in?
It just, the bill just, I believe, says lockdown procedures.
probably check and see if it should apply to both here.
Okay. Because there's a difference between lockdown and lock-in.
It always confused me.
Okay, and so we can ask Representative Comp about that. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, Chair Doherty. So really we're going from basically a suggestion to a shall.
Yes, okay. Yes. Because right now it is not required to have a lockdown, lock-in procedure for schools.
Okay. I guess my question, Madam Chair, would be, do you have any statistics or know if there are any statistics on how many districts already do this?
No, we don't, but we can get that.
Because our district did do that, and we had both in and out as far as mm-hmm. lockdown procedures, and we had to use them this last year.
So, no, but we'll get that information. We've got that, Tim. Okay, any other?
I apologize for being late.
Okay. That's okay. You're excused. Do you have a note?
I can get one.
Thank you. Okay, any other comments? Any questions? Okay, with that, I close the public hearing on House Bill. Is there anyone else that wanted to speak on this bill? I'm sorry. Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2661. And I'm going to open up an informational hearing on school nutrition. We are going to have Joyce Doherty, nice name, and Heidi Dupuy to talk about school nutrition. And should we mention about the, are you going to mention what's on our tables and what they can and cannot do with them?
She didn't spell it right, though.
Thank you.
She didn't spell it right.
No, she spelled it in the Southern Irish way, not the Northern Irish way. Okay, welcome. Thank you very much for
Thank
a very
you.
Important,
Chair
near and dear to my heart issue.
Okay. Chair Doherty, members of the community, my name is Joyce Doherty, and I am the director of the Child Nutrition Programs, and with me...
I'm Heidi Dupuy, the manager for school nutrition
programs.
Okay,
if you just have the microphones a little there. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Not too close.
Not too far, yeah.
Okay. So in front of you, you have a school meal. And it is a school meal that would cost a student at a middle school or a high school $2.60. Now, to prepare this meal, that includes food, it includes labor, it includes supplies, and it includes equipment. It's a nutritious meal. It's a healthy meal. It's a meal that our students are consuming in our schools. And I really want to thank Salem Kaiser School District and Food Service Department for providing the meals this afternoon.
Thank you. Now, do we give the meals back to you?
They're yours. Because,
yes, because I understand that we cannot eat in the committee rooms.
Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Would you explain that, please?
You can't eat in the committee rooms. That's the rule. So I'll be happy to pull the meals, and then we can manage them off the dais.
Salem Kaiser provides 2 hot meals and 2 cold meals per day. And so you have the option of 2 of the cold meals in front of you this afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you, Salem Kaiser Nutrition Department.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, I want to just start by giving you some background on child nutrition and to let you know that child nutrition programs fuel our future. They fuel our children, and they help provide the nutritious and the nutrients that children need in order to grow and to develop. This is not new that food is important. It's one of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It was also something that Harry Truman knew back in 1946 when the National School Lunch Act was permanently authorized in the National School Nutrition Act programs. And so it started when many young men as well as women were found to be not eligible to be able to be in the armed services of the United States because they were nutritionally unsound. And so one of the things that we wanted to do as a nation was to pass legislation to help these men and women so that they would have strong bodies and strong minds. Today, however, we have a sort of an opposite issue because now it's not undernourished in terms of low calories. It's undernourished in terms of high calories. We have an obesity issue. So in Oregon, all of the federal child nutrition programs are housed within the Oregon Department of Education. We have several programs, including the Child and Adult Care Food Program, the School Nutrition Program, Summer Food Service Program, the Farm to School Program, and the USDA Foods Program. These programs offer strong bodies, or provide meet the dietary guidelines of the United States, and they provide strong bodies, strong minds, and strong communities. One of the things that the child nutrition programs are known for is that they address hunger, they address health, and all of those issues lead to academic success. Breakfast after the bell is a key component in terms of what we think is important in terms of promoting academic success as well as health. We also offer summer meals, which help prevent summer learning loss during the summer months when school is not in session. And then we also offer after-school meal programs with some type of an educational activity. Last year, in 2013 to 2014, 53.7% of all of Oregon students were eligible for free or reduced meals. 8.5% of all Oregon households suffered from very low food security. The Child and Adult Care Food Program. This is a program, as a dietitian, I feel that it's extremely important that we nourish our children from at the beginning of infancy. And this is one of the programs that is able to do that. It provides food, services, and beverages for children in childcare settings, in family daycare homes. It also provides some services and meals for adults. This program also supports the after-school at-risk meal and snack program. It provides meals for homeless programs and for Head Starts. We have over 243 sponsors in the state for our child and adult care food program. They include faith-based organizations such as Ascension Lutheran Church of Portland, the Miss Muffin Learning Center, First Church of God, and the Noah Ark Learning Center, Hope Christian Church. So we include churches, faith-based organizations, as well as public entities such as Portland, the City of Portland, the City of Lincoln City, River Road Park and Recs, and Rogue Community College. So we have child nutrition programs in a variety of settings, both public and private. In 2013-2014, we had 243 sponsors. We had 835 sites. We had 2,674 providers. We provided through the Department of Education over $33 million to these sponsors, to these homes, and to these families. All of this is adding to Oregon's economy. We also have, last month, the new proposed rules for the meal pattern for child and adult care food programs was published by USDA. The proposed rules follow, as I said earlier, the U.S. dietary guidelines, and we have a 90-day comment period to make comments on the dietary guidelines and the new meal pattern. The new meal pattern offers a variety of foods for fruits and vegetables, more whole grains, and less sugar and fat. So we have a range of grants that we have in terms of providing reimbursement of meals to our daycare providers and to our sponsors. An average daycare provider receives $350 a month. A center, which can house anywhere between 15 kids, it varies in the size of the center, they may receive $2,000 a month of reimbursement for the meals that are served. Oregon also had mini grants, and these were state mini grants for the after-school, at-risk, and the snack program, and they also provided mini grants to the summer program. And these grants, as a result of some changes within the legislation last year, we were able to offer educational activities. The Summer Food Service Program was established to help ensure that low-income children continue to receive foods when school was out. In Oregon, we have a summer learning summit next week, and that includes the 3L3, which is learning, library, and lunch, partnering together to help ensure that we reduce summer learning loss. The summer food service program is offered throughout the state in camps, in schools, in recreational centers, in tribal organizations. It's throughout the state at a variety of sites. Summer food service, it's one of our lowest we have the lowest participation in the summer program, but we're trying to promote the growth of that. As a state, we only have 134 sponsors, and this is up from last year. So only 18% of children who participate in the National School Lunch and Breakfast programs that are free and reduced participate in the summer food program. I want to talk a little bit about the expansion summer and after-school mini grants. We had over $500,000 of funds that were available. We had 41 grantees, and we're on target to spend all of those dollars. We could have used more, but sponsors are really utilizing the grants. We had over 22 sponsors that received $10,000 to $20,000 to help support their programs. We had over 13 sponsors that received less than $10,000, and we had over 6 sponsors that received less than $5,000. One of our popular programs, and this is a state-funded program as well, and though there is a federal component to it, is our farm-to-school program. Our farm-to-school program farm-to-school and school garden program, and we have over 582 gardens across the state, and they're in camps, nonprofits, schools, community centers. They're all over the state with our school gardens. The farm-to-school program has a garden education-based component. They have edible gardens. And last week we had a summit that had over 500 participants across the state. We had one day where there was 200 participants for the farm-to-school farm-to-school component, and over 300 participants for the garden component. In 2014, USDA wanted states to conduct a farm-to-school census. Oregon ranked number one out of all the states, with 24% of their food budget being spent on local food. This is a map, if you can sort of see where you might be located, all the school gardens within the state of Oregon.
Current legislation. Can you go back to that slide just for a moment, just so we can kind of look at it? So it's other than, what's that county down right there next to Harney County? Is that, that's the only one that doesn't have a program?
That would be, that'd be Lake.
Lake, yeah. We'll work on that. Thank you very much.
In the current legislation cycle, we have over 22 districts participating in the farm-to-school school garden program with the grants. And we have over 73, almost 74% of the funds have been spent, and we're expected to be on target by the end of the fiscal year. The schools are spending their funds in a variety of ways. Our National School Lunch Program, which is one of our largest, which is the largest child nutrition program, includes National School Lunch, School Breakfast, After School Snack, Summer, the Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Program, and the Special Milk. As Heidi mentioned earlier, she is the manager of that program. And again, this was the program that was brought into law in 1946, the National School Lunch.
All of these were brought in 46, you say?
1946 was the National School Lunch Program. Within the last few decades, the various programs have been brought on board under the School Nutrition Act.
Thank you.
School programs work with over 317 sponsors across the state. They include a variety of sponsors, small, large, public schools, private schools, nonprofits, after-school programs. Our Our National School Lunch Program brings in, it passed federal dollars of over $137 million into the state of Oregon.
I like, if you see on these, how many snacks have been served and how many lunches have been served.
Yes.
It's incredible.
It is incredible. Community eligibility provisions. This was in the 2010 Healthy Hungry Free Kids Act, and it allows schools in high poverty areas to offer free school breakfast and lunch to all students at no cost. What's important, I think, is about this program is that in the Western region, Oregon had the highest participation rate for CEP than any other state in the Western region. And that has to do with the partnership within the Department of Education on the education side of the house and the child nutrition side of the house.
Excuse me. Do we want to ask questions now or wait till you're finished before we go on to Ms. Dupuy? Or?
You can ask now or we can ask.
Representative Reardon.
Just a real easy one. What was your definition of a high poverty area in these programs?
Chair Doherty and Representative Reardon, high poverty in the case of this is schools that have SNAP certified students greater than 40% of their enrollment.
Okay, so 40% or more on food stamps.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
So part of the benefits of the CEP or the community eligibility provision is substantial administrative savings to the elimination of the household applications. Also, we have higher student participation rate, and we have more opportunities for all children to participate in the program because child nutrition programs are open to all children regardless of income. Often we are used as a proxy for poverty, but our programs are open to all children, and this gives everyone a chance to be able to eat a meal at no charge to the family. So, did you know that Oregon has had nutrition standards for competitive foods since 2007? And that there are over 256 schools that are offering meals at no charge through CEP. And that there are over 45 million pounds of Oregon products that are distributed through the United States, throughout the United States, as a result within the USDA Foods Program. And we have over 251,000 pounds of fresh Oregon products distributed in within the state of Oregon. So this is showing the combination of all of our programs working together in terms of schools, community, child care, USDA foods, as well as farm to school and our fresh fruit and vegetable program, moving produce and products throughout the state of Oregon.
I'm sorry, but
Representative Reardon.
Sorry, school is defined as it's too many to be districts. So is it school buildings?
Individual
or
schools.
School.
256.
Representative Doherty or Chairman Doherty and Representative Reardon, the 256 are actual schools.
Okay, thank you.
School wellness. This is a joint position. We have several things with school wellness. In 2004, in the USDA Child Nutrition Reauthorization Act, they have a component in there for school wellness. And as a state, we have school wellness policies. Each school district has school wellness policies, and we've been working closely with OSBA and with schools and with some of our private organizations to promote school wellness. We also have a partnership with the Oregon Health Authority in terms of a position that is paid jointly with child nutrition funds and CDC funds through a 1305 grant, and I don't know the name of it because it has like 10 different words to it. So everyone calls it 1305, and to work together to promote school wellness and to promote healthy nutrition programs as well as physical activity, physical education programs in the state. This slide shows that when you start looking at wellness and you start looking at nutrition and you start looking at the availability of child nutrition programs in our schools, we have over 117 priority, focus, and model schools. When you look at the participation, not all of the schools are participating in our breakfast programs. They're not all participating in either our snack or after-school at-risk program. This is an opportunity for us as a state to encourage these schools and these sites to participate in child nutrition programs, because it will help increase participation in the child nutrition programs. It will help in terms of the nutritional status of the children, and it will help with provision of foods.
Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Chair. Doherty, why? Why are they not participating?
Chair Doherty, Representative Frederick, I'm not sure.
Have you talked with them then?
Yes.
And what are you, you're getting some answers. What kind of answers are you getting?
I'm having trouble difficulty answering that.
Excuse me. Chair Doherty and Representative Frederick, looking at the slide, the items that are on the slide are our specialty programs. So the community eligibility provision, the focus and priority schools would need to be broken down to whether they qualify for, are in a high needs area.
They all are.
Yeah, I was going to say, but I mean, if you're a priority or a focus school, very likely you're in a high needs area.
Yes,
I mean, it's almost a guarantee there. So you have in the priority schools, you have less than half of them getting breakfast in the classroom. I'm sorry, I don't understand why that's the case.
So breakfast in the classroom doesn't mean that not serving breakfast in the classroom does not mean that they don't participate in the breakfast program. For scheduling purposes, which we have a bill you'll be hearing today that will address, that we hope to move more schools into serving breakfast after the bell.
And
that's breakfast in the classroom and
that's
breakfast after the
right.
bell. I see. So they may have be getting breakfast anyway, but breakfast after the bell is another thing altogether.
Yep. Okay. Correct.
Chair Doherty, Representative Frederick, I think the other thing, too, is to show that the CACFP After School at Risk Program, those are connected to the little mini grants that I was referring to earlier, and that many of our sponsors are asking for those and are participating in those to help with educational programs and instruction, as well as to participate in, to expand their participation in some of our programs.
Thank you. Representative Hack, you had a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just in clarification, so if the SEP program and this program are targeting schools and districts that have 40% or more who are receiving SNAP, obviously those are your targeted areas that are in the highest need, yet you have the least amount of participation, but those are your targeted areas here. So are you saying that if you do the work for them, then they need the benefit? Are you... I'm not understanding the apathy, I guess. What have you done to reach out to these folks and they're not participating? I mean, if the need is there, I still am not understanding why there's not participation, I guess. I still don't feel like we have a clear answer to the question.
Representative Doherty, Chair of Representative Doherty and Representative Hack, we can get more information for you in terms of why these, we have not surveyed them in terms exactly as to why they're not participating. Sometimes it has to do with schedules. Sometimes it has to do with funding. There are a number of other reasons that they may not be participating. We're just not sure. But we do know that we work with partners, and we have both internal and external folks outside of education working with these schools and school districts to try to increase participation.
I mean, I can see breakfast in the classroom because a lot of times it's in the cafeteria, and they don't necessarily mm-hmm. all the kiddos go yeah. into the classroom. So
Chair Doherty and Representative Hack and the rest of the committee, our child nutrition programs are voluntary. And so the decision for a school to participate in one of the program is held at the local level. Mm-hmm. So we provide support for local school districts and schools to implement these programs, but it is their decision to participate. Mm-hmm. For the CEP, this is the first school year that it's been offered nationwide, and so we had early adopters. Oregon was very aggressive, not in our I should say the school districts were very accepting of CEP, and so in the western regional states, Oregon has the highest participation in CEP. A third of our students are at a CEP school in the state. So there are some school districts who had implementation challenges that I'm looking forward to having them participate this year in CEP. The after-school programs all have a education or enrichment component that goes along with the food component that our reimbursement is not available to support, so that has to come through other funding.
So it's voluntary. I mean, I worked with some school districts that did not have a lunch program, and they chose not to participate. So is that pretty much?
We have about 21 school districts in the state of Oregon that don't participate at all in the National School Lunch or School Breakfast Program.
I didn't know that.
So,
thank you.
And Chair Doherty and Representative Hack and members of the committee, these three areas, breakfast in the classroom and the after-school at-risk program, are part of our strategic plan within ODE as well as child nutrition in terms of promoting more participation and increasing the percentage within schools within Oregon. So we are working with our partners, with our education partners, as well as with our private nonprofit partners to help promote these programs within the schools.
That's great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
So our USDA Foods. This is a program I'm just focusing right now on the number, the amount of food that is grown in Oregon that is distributed through the United States as a result of USDA Foods, and that we have quite a presence within the United States with our products from Oregon.
I just have to make a comment. It is amazing. We've got 45 million pounds of Oregon product going someplace else, agricultural products.
Yes.
And 45 million. Did I read that wrong?
It's a lot.
Yeah. This is the first time I've heard of that. And so that's good.
I think it's very good.
We like growing products.
And we are growing.
Oh, good.
So part of the growth has to do with our USDA pilot project that Senator Wyden took the lead in terms of moving forward. This project uses USDA food entitlement funds to promote unprocessed fruits and vegetables within our state. Currently, we only have one vendor in Oregon, but there are other vendors that are trying to come on board to help process this. We also, within our schools, we use USDA Department of Defense Fresh Produce Program. Again, over 251,000 pounds of fresh Oregon produce is distributed in Oregon, and we have spent over $826,000 of USDA Foods Entitlement on the Department of Defense funds. Coverage is statewide, both eastern and western Oregon. Finally, questions?
Okay, are there any questions before we move on to Ms. Dupuy? Representative Palooza.
Just a quick question. Just my experiences in visiting the schools in my district. Frequently, there is a lot of food waste. The kids choose whether they're not liking the healthy food or whatever. How are we dealing with that?
Chair Doherty and Representative Polsey. One of the things that we're trying to do is to provide nutrition education. We have found that in school districts that offer the Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Program, which is one of the programs that is through the National School Lunch Program, those students are much more likely to eat the food that's on their trays from the school district. We have also found that the farm-to-school program and the garden program helps to expose children to foods, and they're more likely to consume the foods. So it's part of nutrition education, it's part of exposure, and it's part of working within the school system, not just the cafeteria, but the education side of the house as well, so that it's that children are able to receive the message in the cafeteria, in the classroom, in the hallways, and on bus, so they're able to get this message that these are foods that are healthy, fun, and enjoyable.
Excellent. Thank you.
Representative Pack.
I think that the work that you do is just amazing with what you have to work with. Mm-hmm. And so I commend you for what you are doing to keep the dollars right here in Oregon. And my question is, do you find that your hands are tied with what you can offer given the regulations that you're under? I think so oftentimes the public doesn't understand the regulations that you're under. And I think that it'd be good to sometimes get the word out that there really oftentimes isn't a lot that you can do. And even I appreciate what Representative Peluso brought up, that there is waste and there are regulations and things that are beyond your control. And so I would just like to say that I really appreciate the work that you do and the folks that are on the front lines doing the hard work with our kids and really trying to provide not only nutritious meals, but meals that taste good for kids. So I don't know how many of you are in this room today that do that work, but I so appreciate what you do. And it's hard work, and so often it is a thankless job. And I'm telling you, I just commend all of you, and so I just want to say thank you so much for what you do, and just know that there are many of us that really do see the tough job that you have. So I do have a question, though. That was that.
Nice things about you.
Do you find yourself confined, and is there? And I don't know if there's something that can be done about that, or do those confinements restrict what you can and can't do, and how much you can buy in our state, and some of those things.
Chair Daugherty and Representative Hack, actually there's some people behind me that are much more versed in doing this. At the state level, we work to monitor how well the local school districts are implementing the federal guidelines. And so those are very general, half a cup of fruit or three quarters of a cup of vegetable. And the program at the local level is making the actual food choices and doing the purchasing. I think that they would say that there are constraints around the procurement requirements for them, that are one of the concerns is the meal pattern is, while it supports the dietary guidelines for Americans, is out of step with how Americans eat. And the further those get apart, the stranger the food looks to the children who are coming to eat it, no matter how nutritious and healthy it is. And that's a constraint. And then we also are constrained because most of these programs are financing their school nutrition program on their federal reimbursement, which is not keeping up with food costs. And the foods that are being required of them are higher cost foods.
Well, I'm just looking at, for $2.60, what Salem Kaiser was putting together, where you've got a pear, a salad, with dressing, with meat, with cheese, with a roll, and with milk. And that was $2.60. So it is. Other questions?
I had one.
Senator Barreto.
Thank you, Chair Daugherty. You had mentioned way back in the PowerPoint sponsors. I think it was 243 sponsors during the school year, and then 134 sponsors, and you mentioned a few of those. Do you actively go out in the communities or through the state and pursue those sponsors?
Okay. Chair Doherty, Representative
Barreto.
Barreto.
Thank you.
I can pronounce his name.
What we do is that we do outreach in terms of we're trying to make our to promote our programs. We are also limited in terms of what we can do with outreach. We have partners to help us promote the program and to help grow the program and encourage sponsors to participate. But those programs are very difficult to do. I mean, they require a lot of work, both on our end as well as on the sponsor's end. But we do we are aware of the need to have more outreach with many of these areas within our state so that we can have more sponsors on our program. We want more sponsors. We want higher participation, and we want more kids eating our foods.
Follow up?
Please.
These sponsors now, are they monetary or a volunteer time also or both?
These sponsors are, they can be parents, they can be moms and dads with this child care program. They can be business individuals. They could, like I said, they can be like with the YMCA, maybe a sponsor. The city of Portland may be a sponsor. So you have some sponsors that have a high level of sophistication and you're running a lot of meals through them. You have other sponsors that are the Mary Ladybug Daycare Center. Mm-hmm. And that sponsor is the cook, the manager, and the child care provider. So you have a variety of skills with the sponsors. And we have some very stringent regulations in terms of that they have to follow in operating the program.
Yeah. And Mr. Pui, we started asking questions, and I didn't want to imprint on your presentation, so if you wanted to continue, I'm sorry.
So I'm here to present on the bills.
Okay.
That you have before you.
What we'll do is we'll do that after the informational hearing and getting the information out. Okay. And then what we do is we gavel out of the informational hearing and then go into that. The one thing I wanted to mention, and Representative Hack reminded me, there is a large school district superintendent who is a wonderful person who went into education for two reasons. One was his fifth grade teacher was very kind to his mother, and his mother was disabled. And two was the lunch lady, because mm-hmm. he was on free lunch, and she made sure that none of the kids knew that he was on free lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And this had to be 30 years ago. And so those are the sort of people that we're working with, you know, with this. We call them the lunch ladies and lunch men, but it is definitely a wonderful asset and a very important partner in public schools.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so any other questions of this panel, and we'll...
We've been awfully nice, but I have another nice comment I would like to
make.
Would
you like... Please be nice.
I taught last year. It was my 42nd year, and I was you have a duty every day. And my duty was to go to the free breakfast in the cafeteria to be one of the adults to help and support.
Mm-hmm.
And there were probably anywhere from 200 to 300 kids in there on any given day. And
it was at high school.
It's a high school, and it's a situation where then I would go to first period lunch, and some of the students that have been there would be in my first period. And always those kids, if they had gone down there that day and eaten breakfast, were much more, you know, lively, alert, and ready to learn. And so I really do believe your three L's,
yes.
You know, learn, library, and lunch, right, or something like that.
Yeah.
Because it's really, really hard to be able to concentrate if you're hungry.
Yes, it is.
So Absolutely. It's a good program.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll close the informational hearing on school nutrition, and we will open up a public hearing on House Bill 2445, which happens to be, pardon? 2545. And actually, I'm going to have Representative Frederick kick over the gavel for a moment.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2545 requires school districts to provide lunch free of charge to students who are eligible for reduced-priced lunches. It directs the Department of Education to reimburse school districts for the actual amount the student would have been required to pay, and it declares an emergency effective 1st of July 2015. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair,
Thank you, and would you please introduce yourself?
Okay, thank you. For the record, I'm Margaret Doherty. I'm the state representative for House District 35, which is Tigard in Southwest Portland. And
please go ahead.
Yes. And Representative David Gomberg from House District 10 on the Central Coast.
Okay. We came up with this idea probably 6-8 months ago when we were talking about food, and then Representative Gomberg, I remembered that from last session, had some very important words to say about food nutrition. And when we start looking and seeing the impact that food and nutrition have on kids, I think about this a story. I'm going to start out with a story. I was a high school teacher from 74 to 84, and so we were invited, a bunch of us, to the high school reunion of the class of 1980. And so our kids, of course, our kids at that time were 45 or 48. I had one young man who we were kind of chit-chatting. All of a sudden, he got a little kind of sheepish, and he said, "I need to apologize." And I go, "Well, for what?" Because he was a good kid. And he says, "I don't know if you remember, but when I was a sophomore and you had me, you loaned me lunch money, and I've never paid it back." And that was 32 years later. And so that is the impact that people in schools make upon kids, whether it's a backpack, whether it's nutrition, whether it's getting them a pencil or whatever. And so this is what we're here. And the bill that we have today is an important bill to feed children. Currently, we have free lunch and we have reduced lunch. And we started talking to some of the food service people. And, for example, the Hillsborough School District picks up the reduced fee. And when we talk about the reduced fee, we wanted to get more kids fed because it's a better link towards student outcome. So this is a bill. This bill is kind of a smart target investment of own, and this sounds strange, of only $2.56 million, and it will literally feed an additional 30,000 children on free lunch. Schools often find themselves caught in an awkward position where parents of the reduced lunch price kids owe money. They find themselves playing debt collector. They either sometimes pick up the tab themselves, which the food service people are working on such a slim margin they really don't have, or the child gets that inevitable cheese sandwich because their parents have not had the ability to pay. So under this bill, students won't face the humiliation of not being able to buy a lunch and having that regular lunch instead of that cheese sandwich. It is what it is to pick up the reduced lunch for the biennium. It will go from here to House revenue. It's not only been endorsed by many people, it was also in the governor's budget. To deal with, especially with early childhood, because it's one of those things you can just tell when a child has had breakfast.
Well, thank you, Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Frederick, members of the committee. Some of you will remember a remonstrance I made last year about a woman named Nell Ward, a remarkable woman who really did something very remarkable. She walked into the Newport Intermediate School and wrote a check to pay off the past due lunch accounts of all the students there. Now, on the Central Coast, two-thirds of our kids receive free or subsidized meals. Fully one-third live below the federal poverty line. Our schools send food home on weekends to make sure children come back Monday ready to learn rather than hoping to eat. And I know many of your districts face similar struggles. But what happens when lunch accounts are past due? Well, the answer, as you just heard, is that across the state in our largest and smallest districts, students receive an emergency meal. Instead of a hot entree, a pizza or lasagna or a taco salad, these kids get a cheese sandwich or are limited at the salad bar. So let's think about that for a moment. At the time when children are most struggling to fit in, we single some out. We send a clear message to the entire lunchroom that this child is different, poorer, or lesser. And not coincidentally, we're placing a burden on the lunchroom staff that implements this stigmatizing policy. They've spoken to me of the stress of having to take food away from students every day. Now, to be clear, I think that students need to pay their bills. Excuse me, I think parents need to pay their bills. I think students need to learn responsibility at an early age, but I'm not sure that a cheese sandwich is the answer. Districts are not the bad guys here, and after all, they're providing a free lunch. And many are proactively contacting families to remind them to pay, to find other payment sources, or to check to see if circumstances have changed, and the student now qualifies for free meals. But I think we can do better. I think this bill does better. In my own district, after 10 years of emergency meals, a decision was made that stepping back to prepare a special meal takes more time and costs more money than just handing the child an entree. It probably also reduces food waste, so everyone now gets a regular meal and payments are addressed in other ways. Eliminating special meals, eliminating subsidized meals is a win-win that saves money for the district, reduces stress on staff, and saves, most importantly, self-respect for the children. Singling kids out stigmatizes them with what I call the scarlet sandwich. The scarlet sandwich. And it's not the answer. It sends the wrong message. While well-intended, looked at another in another way, the practice is just plain mean. Now, that's the essence of the remonstrance that I made a year ago. I'm here today because I believe that every child receiving subsidized meals is paying for a scarlet lunch. And I think we can do better. I think this bill does better for us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the panel?
Yes.
Representative.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Question I have then, what will the collection process look like, or will there be a collection process toward the parents that are not paying?
Well, what it is currently, what they do to qualify, you fill out a form and you have to do the paperwork. Under this proposal, there would be no collection from the parents because the 30,000-ish, and they've got more figures than I do, children that are on the reduced lunch would just be on free, so there would be no collection from the parents.
Follow up?
Yes, follow up.
The price tag, $2.56 million?
That's what LFO came up with, $2.56 for the biennium.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? Yes. Representative Peluso?
No.
Yes. Representative.
Just curious, is there a way that, because I agree the sandwich, the scarlet sandwich is awful, is there a way that we could not do that, but also take the opportunity, though, to take those children who fall behind and have those families apply for the free lunch so that they're getting the federal subsidy and the state's not picking that up, and then we take the balance and the state pays their balance? Because I know once the child, once the family is moved on to free lunch, whatever the balance is, they have to pay that. So the state would pick up the balance, but we would also be able to still capture the federal dollars, because oftentimes in my conversation with folks in food service, when they run into that situation, most of the time what has happened is there's been a change in income status and the family just doesn't know that I can go back in and apply for the free lunch. And so a lot of times it's a conversation where we just need to have you reapply. And once they apply, they're 9 times out of 10, they qualify for the free lunch. So I just would like to see us make sure that we're capturing those federal dollars
as
first, and then we can take those dollars and put them into other programs in addition with what the ladies were talking about earlier, more food for kids after school, more dollars to help further more food, better food for our children. Is there a way that we could do that? Don't give them the scarlet sandwich, still give them their meals so that we eliminate that but still capture those federal dollars.
Now, I don't know. I have a feeling there's some people behind us that might have the answer to that question.
I'd love to know.
If they could answer it. If not, I will get you an answer.
Okay.
But I don't know about that.
I'm just wondering
aspect.
If we could have the best of both worlds somehow in there, where we get the federal money, plus we take care of whatever they didn't owe and get those folks on the federal program.
And so maybe during the presentation, if somebody could answer that question.
There are people hopping up right now. I think we'll have an answer.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Hack, my understanding is that the approach to these past due accounts is handled differently on a district-by-district basis. In my own district, they decided to eliminate the program and keep track of what parents owe and try to collect it later, essentially saying you don't get your degree, you don't get your graduation until your accounts are paid up, but each district would handle that differently.
But if this bill would say you can't do that, we pick up the difference, and anybody that doesn't qualify for the free and is having an issue, we're going to pay it. Could we have the best of both worlds?
And I see what you understand. It's the idea of that reduced category. Are there people in there that could qualify for the free, therefore the federal reimbursement?
Yep, they would get the free. If they don't, we'll take care of you.
Got it.
So there might be a win-win on both sides.
Representative Hack, I have a feeling we have people in the back who will be coming up in just a minute who can answer that
question
a little closer.
Anything else?
Anyone else? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time.
And, yeah, why don't I just call? Let some folks know already, if you can come up, Lynn Shore, Debbie Webster, and Cynthia Henry.
Yes, we have quite a few people signed up, and we've got about 45 minutes for all of the testimony, plus two other bills. So if we can kind of look at time, but thank you so much for coming.
I'll go ahead and start. Thank you for having us, Chair Doherty and committee. My name is Lynn Shore, and I am the Oregon School Nutrition Association Legislative Chair. And I'm also the school nutrition director at North Marion School District up in the Hubbard-Aurora area.
Thank you.
First of all, I wanted to give you a little bit of information. Probably you've heard it millions of times, but just in case. Some background on free and reduced meal pricing. It's basically the free and reduced meal program is students fill out applications, and it's based on income and numbers of members in their family, and also a few other things. Children who are homeless, runaway, if they receive migrant education support, living in a household that has temporary assistance for needy families, we call that TANF. SNAP, food stamps, same thing. They are automatically qualified for free regardless of their family size or their income. A household with children meeting the above requirements and are not already receiving free school meals, they have to fill out the application with their income, etc. Foster children, children who live in a household that is on food distribution for Indian reservations, as FDPIR, they also qualify for free meals. The children that qualify by income or the eligibility of free meals is the total gross household income, and it usually does not exceed 1.3 times the federal poverty level. Children who qualify for reduced meals, that's the total gross income that does not exceed 1.85 times of the federal poverty level. When they fill out the lunch application, like I said, it goes by income eligibility and household size, and I have a little handout. I have the Oregon Department of Education letter off of their website explaining free and reduced meals, and also the chart that we use. If we pass this bill, if you guys pass this bill, Oregon would join Vermont, Minnesota in covering the reduced price for copay lunches, and Colorado currently covers for ages K through 5. The number of students qualifying for free and reduced lunches, like Joyce said before, right now is 53.7%. That has increased from 1996. It was 30.8%. So we're getting more and more students that are really in need of these programs. Oregon has the second highest minimum wage in the nation. And I know we're all talking about minimum wage and all that stuff lately. But even with Oregon's high minimum wage, a lot of the workers tend to work fewer hours. And this is according to Oregon Blue Book. The average workers in Oregon business earns $759 a week in 2013, which is below the national average. The national average is $825. Keeping in mind that these numbers that we use for our charts are federal, because basically the school lunch program is a federal program, so we have to use their numbers. The median household in Oregon, according to U.S. Census Quick Facts, in 2013 was 50,229, which I personally think that's a little high number, but that's the average in Oregon. So that means an average family of five, they would qualify for reduced lunches if they made that average income of an Oregonian household. They would not only qualify for that, their income would be over $1,600 more than the basic minimum that you would have to make for reduced lunches. So there is quite a few kids in need of that. Right now, the families that qualify for that, for those reduced meals, they really struggle to pay that 40 cents a month, or I mean a meal.
Yeah.
I know when I was a kid, and this was in the 70s, I had a friend that qualified for reduced meals, and then it only was a dime. But her family couldn't afford to give that dime. She would come to school every day, and I would go through my piggy bank, and I would give her that dime so that she could have her school lunch, her reduced price school lunch. And she was embarrassed about it, that she didn't have the money, but we all knew that, you know, she needed to eat. So, and there's a lot of kids around here that are like that, that are just on the border of not being able to afford that. My district is seeing a sharp increase in students on the free and reduced meal applications that are considered error-prone. That means they are within a few dollars of qualifying for either this, for either their status above or below their current free or reduced status. My district currently has several families that are within even $50 of qualifying for free that are now reduced. They make $50 more than the free price. So there's a lot of them. They're just right on that border. This bill would provide a free meal for approximately 306,550 Oregon students that are currently on either free or reduced that may not be able to afford lunch otherwise. That number is 53.7% of the kids of the population of Oregon school kids right now. 306,550. And I was going to mention about the $2.56 million, but you took care of that, so thank you. These funds would not only be funneled back into Oregon's economy. Like Joyce mentioned, we have a lot of local foods that come from Oregon that this would help, that we use. It would also reduce pressure on the local school budgets, like you guys were talking about earlier. If a student owes lunch money and it doesn't get paid, the district has to pay that out of the district's general fund. And that's kind of a federal legislation which we are working, or it's not a federal legislation, I'm sorry. That is a policy now, but we're working federally to hopefully get something in the School Nutrition Reauthorization Act for 2015 that will make all schools nationwide have the same regulations about what to do about student debt. Right now, there's nothing wrote in stone. Every district has their own deal. I think right now the only thing that is written in stone is that we cannot use food service district funds. In Vermont, when they, like I mentioned before, they started this, within 6 months of covering that 40-cent copay, the statewide participation increased, which means more reimbursements for everybody, more federal reimbursements. And some districts even saw an increase of 79% in just Vermont in the first 6 months. Do you have any questions for me?
What we're going to do, we've got lots of people speaking on all of the three other bills. Mm-hmm. And so I hate to do this, but we're going to limit all of the bills to the presentation on this current bill for 15 minutes. So why don't we go through and hear from the panel, and then if we've got questions. And if you already have it in testimony, then we've got it here on OLIS. So we're just kind of keeping an eye on time. I'm a former teacher. I keep my eye on time. So anyway, thank you so much for your presentation.
Chair Doherty and committee, thank you for having us. I'm Cindy Hyatt Henry. I'm the Nutrition Services Director for McMinnville School District. I'm also the president of our Oregon School Nutrition Association. I brought information today that I've handed out to you addressing the breakfast in the classroom, which I know is another bill, but I thought you would like to have that information. And I also brought a piece of information with a bar chart that shows my district and what happened when we implemented community eligibility. And the reason I thought this would be pertinent to you is that while community eligibility is free meals for all students, price has a huge impact on participation. And when our high school fed 500 students a day prior to community eligibility, and now they serve 800 students a day, that is a significant
increase. And community eligibility is just a different factor to figure in.
Community eligibility is one of the programs that Joyce spoke to. It's free meals for all students in a school or in a...
With 40% over SNAP.
Right.
Got it.
And in our district, we chose to offer free meals to all students.
Mm-hmm.
And when I told my staff that we no longer had to have the scarlet cheese sandwich, they cried with joy. And it's an awful thing to do. And so while this will not benefit my district because we are serving all of our students free, I want you to see that it will benefit families who are at the reduced price level or who are just a little bit above being able to get that. And many times families will not apply for those benefits as children get older because there's a stigma
right.
attached. And so I'm very much in support of this bill and the bill for breakfast after the bell or breakfast in the classroom.
Okay, thank you.
Chairman Dowdery and members of the committee, my name is Debbie Webster, and I'm the Nutrition Services Director for Rainier and Classical 9 School Districts. I have a population of about 1,700 students in my two districts, 1,000 at Rainier, 700 in Classical 9, with 149 students that would benefit from the reduced-priced meals. When we have students that are healthy and have a full stomach, they're going to learn better. As Representative McLean said, that her students, she could see the difference in her students, and that is so true. That you have less absenteeism, less trips to the nurse's office, and better learning when our students are fed well. In my district, I have since the state has taken over paying for our breakfast for our reduced students, I started a reduced lunch fund for our students because I felt like that was something that was needed. I've been doing it ever since then. And the last 2 years, I've had a teacher who thought it was so important that we have donations coming from all over the nation as well as the world to help support the kids in our district. Mm-hmm. I have people donating from Portland, Michigan, Minnesota, and Australia, so as well as our own community. And that has... So it's something that our community and taxpayers would support is what that tells me, because it's coming from everywhere. It's not just my Rainier families, but it's nationwide and worldwide donating to our kids. And to address Representative Hack's question about can we talk to these families, and I would assume that all of our directors, when kids' balances get high, I make a personal phone call to those families and say, hey, what's changed? And then you hear the story, and then you can say whether I can help or not, whether it's a divorce in the family or a change. So we do make those calls already to make that impact on families. So when things seem to be like, okay, you have a $20 balance, I need to call that family and make that call and find out what's changed. And then we either get them on free or we include them on the reduced lunch program, whether it's somebody who qualifies for a reduced or paid, because sometimes it's a paid family that things have changed and they don't know or don't want to apply. And so I think we already do that. So any questions?
Thank you. Any questions of this panel? No. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you for all you guys do. Okay, next we have Sherry Meeker, Whitney Ellersick, and Gita Gunther Sweeney. I hope I did not butcher your names. Thank you. We're going to extend some time. The Department of Education has been generous enough that we may hold them over. So we'll see once the stories are out.
Go ahead, Chair.
Okay.
Chair Doherty and committee, I'm Cherie Meeker. I'm from Newburgh School District. I'm the nutrition services supervisor there. And I just wanted to say I have 231 children in my district that would benefit directly from this. It would help my program, but it would also impact my lunch ladies who are trying to collect the money from the families. And I just think it's a brilliant idea and totally support it.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. My name is Geeta Grater Sweeney, and I'm the director of Portland Public Schools Nutrition Services Program. And I'm here today in favor of this and to support this bill. We have about 25 schools out of the 84 that are on CEP. However, we still have 59 schools that aren't eligible for that program, and we have approximately 1,400 students that are in the reduced category that have to pay for meals. Unfortunately, the state is reimbursing breakfast for these kids, so they're all eating breakfast. But what we see is when it comes time to lunch, they don't have the money. And so a lot of times they're just going to skip lunch, especially the older kids. They just say, you know, don't have it, I'm not going to eat. And as we know, you know, our mission is to feed students so that they're ready to learn. But however, if they miss their lunch in the middle of the day, you know, they're just not they don't have the attention span and they're not ready to learn. So I'm here again to support this bill. I think it would really be great. For Portland, it only cost the state the 40-cent copay, would only cost about $95,000 for our students at Portland Public Schools. However, we would get in an additional $645,000 of federal funds that could then be used to continue our purchasing of our Oregon apples and pears. I was going to say pears because that's our fruit. And because we have a real emphasis on that in Portland. We're purchasing 32% of our foods that are grown and produced in Oregon. So thank you for your time. Thank you for having this bill, and I hope that everyone will support it.
Okay. So you're saying that this could be Senator Thomason's
there
pear
you go.
From Hood
there
River?
You go.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
So would it be that the students, their families, would still apply for the reduced, so you would still be receiving the federal subsidy, and then the state would pick up the difference?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I just want to make sure that that's understood, that we're not doing away with that
piece. No.
And
just
the difference is about 40 cents.
Right. Okay.
Exactly.
Make sure that people understand
Thank you
that.
Very much.
And are we going to, is this going to replace the other program that we have, the SEP program?
No, it would not. Because there's some schools that just aren't eligible for the CEP, and so there is no choice. They fill out the application, and wherever they fall, they have to pay for the 40 cents. So it would not replace the CEP
program. So will it be either or? Either you're a SEP school or you're
right.
This?
And it's based on the guidelines from the federal government.
I think we need some clarification there, too, because people may, you know, no, there won't be a doubling up, but you'll either be
one
or the other. Thank you.
Okay. And would you like that clarification formally, or?
We can talk about that.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Please.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty and committee members. My name is Whitney Ellersick, and I'm the Assistant Director for Portland Public Schools in the Nutrition Services Department. And I, too, am here to testify in favor of the House Bill 2545. And you've heard a lot of the statistics, and we've talked a lot about the numbers of how many students and families this would impact and what their income level is. And I just want to share with you a few of those additional stories from our district as to why this impacts our families, our students, and ultimately their academic achievement, because we know that well-nourished minds and bodies are able to achieve much more than hungry ones. So for us, I'll take you back. At the beginning of the school year at Cleveland High School in Southeast Portland, we had a 15-year-old student who would eat with us regularly at breakfast and at lunch. Last year, her family was eligible for free meals. And like every year, based on income, she had to turn in a new meal application. Based on her family's income and our department processed that meal application. It was determined that because her family was now making $10 over the eligibility guidelines for free meals, she now was eligible for reduced. My staff had to communicate that to her when she came down for lunch that day, that now instead of receiving free lunch, she would have to pay 40 cents a day. And the student was distraught. She was so upset because she knew that she nor her family could afford that 40 cents a day. somebody covered her lunch for that day so that she could eat, but she has not been back to the cafeteria since for breakfast nor lunch because she cannot afford it, and she knows that she owes somebody 40 cents for the meal that she did eat. And this is not the only story like this. It's too often, I know, for myself, my staff, for probably other people in the room right now. We have 7-year-olds that come in that are eligible for reduced price meals and will pull out of their pockets change, pennies, nickels, and dimes out of their pockets. And my staff very affectionately calls this the couch fund. They have been diving through their couches, pulling out these coins in order to pay for their meals. And you can tell because there's lint and pieces of other objects that you would find in cushions of furniture that they are providing to us for their lunch for that day. And they'll tell you, this is all I could find, Miss Whitney. This is all I could find, Miss Leslie. Those parents and these families are also very hardworking. That's who we're talking about. They're not typically the families that don't have jobs. They're families, they're hardworking, blue-collar families in our area that typically tell us, can you just wait till Tuesday? If you can just keep feeding my kid till Tuesday, I will get you the money. And these are the families we're talking about that struggle. And while some of us, you know, look at $70 for the year, just under $70 for the year for their meals for lunch, it's not a lot for some of us in this room, but it's a hefty burden for these families. So I just want to thank you for your time and consideration into this bill, both for me and for these children. Thank you.
Any questions? Okay, thank you very much. Okay. Philip Kennedy Wong, Patty Whitney Wise, and James Barta.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for record, Philip Kennedy Wong, representing Oregon Food Bank. I'm going to try something I've never done before, which is try to use my tablet for part of my notes for the testimony today. So if I mess up, you can blame technology. Let me first start by saying that Oregon Food Bank, some of you may or may not know, but we have 20 regional food banks throughout the state of Oregon, and those are essentially warehouses that brings food to small pantries, churches, and other types of agencies across the state it's about 950 of these agencies. So that's a lot of folks that we touch in the work that we do. And we take a survey, you know, every year to get a sense of who's experiencing hunger, and one of the things that we found has been that there's a large number of households with children under the ages of 17 that are going to our food banks. And, you know, we're talking about once a month these families coming there to get, you know, a 3 to 5 day worth of food. And so the numbers that we found was roughly 34% just in the last year or two. And because of these numbers, you know, Oregon Food Bank has really ramped up its effort addressing childhood hunger. And one of the things that we've done is that we've been starting up with this experimental program of school-based food pantries. And we're also starting partnerships with the private sector, like the hospitals and healthcare entities, on doing hunger screening with school children. We worked out a diagnostic that doctors and healthcare practitioners can utilize, which brings us to, you know, why we're here today, and that is, as some of you may or may not know, you know, that hunger does affect a child's, you know, physical development, their brain development, and other aspects of their lives. And for us, when you look at it from that standpoint, we're talking about 39,000 kids. This investment in this bill is such a small amount to impact the future of these kids. I mean, 39,000 kids will eventually become adults, will eventually, you know, try to, you know, lead productive or constructive lives. And this is the upfront investment that we think is necessary in order to help these kids. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Patty Whitney Wise. I'm the director for Partners for Hunger Free Oregon and also part of the Oregon Hunger Task Force. I'm pleased to be here in support of this bill. Oregon historically has been working to support children and their food needs. We were one of the first states to get rid of the school breakfast copay. We would become, as you heard, one of the first states to get rid of the school lunch copay. We also have mini grants, which you heard from Joyce about, for both summer and after school meal and snack that has helped in our outreach efforts to engage more local community groups in those programs. And yes, there's still, to Representative Frederick's point, there's still a lot of need for outreach. We work very hard on that. We have several staff on our staff that works with the Department of Education and local communities. And if you have schools who need some technical assistance, let us know. We'll help them make sure they access those programs. This is a wonderful way for Oregon to continue that tradition of making sure that kids have the food they need to learn in school and become productive adults. So I really appreciate that you're taking this bill up, and we'll be in full support the entire way. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Chair Doherty, members of the committee, my name is James Barta. I am the new legislative director for Children First for Oregon. And our vision is to make Oregon the best place there is to be a kid. And so we don't have our own agenda, but work with children's advocates, like many of the people that have already testified. And this bill fits two of the categories that we are particularly concerned about, in education and the health of these children. And many have already testified to the effects of hunger. And so what I want to emphasize is Children First is a data-driven organization as well. And so just as an example, in Representative Pareto's counties of Umatilla, Union, and Wallawa, each of those counties rank in the top 10 in the per capita eligibility for children eligible for the reduced lunch. So it would profoundly affect many of the rural and urban areas around our state. And in fact, we have the latest, it's easily obtainable, but I have it with me, the data for each of the counties and each of the school districts. So if there are any questions about how this measure would affect your own areas, I would be more than happy to provide it.
Could you provide it to the administrator and he can get it out?
Okay, thank you. I can do that. And so I'm, you know, currently statewide, as has been pointed out, more than 30,000, some 39,000, according to this past year, are on reduced lunch. And more than half, and that marks more than half of the children are eligible then for free and reduced lunch. So this would have a profound effect. And I'd be happy to answer any of your questions.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of the panelists?
No, just
Representative.
Patty, could you refresh my memory? We serve on the Hunger Task Force. And it seems like perceptions are that our economy is getting better, there's more employment, and yet didn't we have a report that despite the increase in income, that the demand for food was consistent? And we're not winning that battle.
So, Chair Doherty and Representative Reardon, that's correct. And a lot of it has to do with the types of jobs that are coming back and how slowly the jobs have been coming back. So for families who may have been in higher-paying jobs before the recession, the new economy's jobs pay quite a bit less. And so there are a lot more families who need some help, whether it's at the food bank or through the school meals programs, in order to make ends meet.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. Any other questions? We've got five more minutes for this bill, and then we'll move on to the next. Thank you very much for coming and for what you guys do every day. Okay, so we've got Morgan Allen, Tricia Smith, Cassandra Griffin, and Jessica Adamson, and we have three more, four or five more people. If there's anything new to add, do it. If not, we're going to keep you to 3 minutes total.
I'll go 60 seconds.
I love doing this. Yes.
Chair Doherty, for the record, Morgan Allen with the Oregon School Boards Association. Happy to be here. Everything I learned about child nutrition, I learned in my 4 years at the department from Joyce and Heidi. And the other ladies that went before us, I've come to believe, are really some of the unsung heroes in our school district, the child nutrition professionals. We support the bill, urge you to move it along. And some of the things that the folks before me are too nice to say is that Oregon is at the very low end of support for child nutrition and food compared to the investments that their states make in our lunch programs. I think in all total, Oregon invests less than $10 million a biennium in our lunch programs. And there's also insufficient support from the feds, and as Representative Hack and some of the other people. So there's a lot of bureaucracy. I believe there's an infamous 22-page form you have to fill out for the USDA regulations. So these folks do a ton. And the other thing, and I'll say this, and this is on us, our districts are tough on our nutrition programs. We expect them to basically be self-sufficient and keep themselves in the red, and we don't want them dipping into our general fund. So we put a lot of pressure on them as well. So just appreciate them. Appreciate you bringing the bill forward, and we certainly urge you to get it moving down the line.
Okay, thank you very much.
In the black, yes. Right?
Yeah. In the black, right? I mean, in the black. Sorry.
Yes, thank you.
Sorry, in the black.
We are listening.
We want them to be in the black.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association. For those of you new to the committee, OSEA represents about 20,000 classified school employees, and they include the lunch ladies and the school secretaries who often are involved in this discussion. My lunch ladies would like you to know that they don't like serving scarlet sandwiches, and they often bring food to these students. My secretaries would like you to know that they don't like calling families that they know have no money and demand that they send money to school with their child to pay for their child's food. They know that these families have no choices, and yet they're forced to call them and act as though they do. We think this is a very simple, common sense bill that will allow our students the dignity of eating food with all the rest of the other students and having a full belly so that they can think when they get back to the classroom. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
That's hard to follow. Chair Doherty, members of the committee, my name is Cassandra Griffin. I'm from Upstream Public Health. We are a statewide public health advocacy organization working out of Portland, but serving the whole state. We believe that smart policies are the best way to create communities that help all people lead healthy, full lives. I'm here today to add my voice to the chorus of support for this bill. I'm going to be very brief. I have one new element that I haven't heard brought up fully. This is building on what Representative Gomberg said earlier. Oregon suffers from some of the worst high school graduation rates in the country. Low-income kids are some of the most likely to fall through the cracks. Anything that we can do to keep those kids in school is good for our state. If we can keep them there because they feel welcomed, if we can keep them there because they're walking through the doors to get food, if we can keep them there because they have enough food in their bellies to concentrate, those kids are going to be able to add to our bottom line and our productivity and our success as a state in the long run, and it is worth it to invest in them now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you so much. Okay, and the last panelists we have, at least signed up, Jessica Adamson. Now, Heidi and Joyce, you're also on the list. Did you need to speak some more, or do you want to come up? And then we also have, has Sherry Meeker come up or not? Okay, you did. Thank you. So, Jessica.
Madam Chair.
Nutrition ladies, did you want to finish up, too? You were on the list, so apparently not.
Okay. Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jessica Adamson, here today with Providence Health and Services, Oregon's largest hospital and health system with clinics and hospitals throughout Oregon. And we see the direct effects of children who have not had enough to eat as we meet with their families and provide health care. We view this as an important step to building healthier communities together. That's what Providence is all about, and we view this as an important public health in addition to educational issue. You've heard a lot from folks today. We're a big part of the Screen and Intervene program that Mr. Wong spoke about. We also believe that reducing childhood hunger will improve childhood health. We see more frequent illness among kids that are sick or are hungry. These families that are in this cohort that would be eligible for now free lunch are families who struggle with food insecurity. By reducing the cost of them to feed their kids even $2 a week, those are resources that can go back into helping those families keep kids, brothers, sisters, and parents fed and full over the weekend and throughout the week. And we think that's pretty important to overall population health. So thank you for bringing this bill forward. We strongly support this effort and encourage its passage.
Yeah, thank you. Josh, do you have anything else? We're going to have to wrap up. So.
Chair Doherty and the committee, I'm Heidi Dupuy.
Oh, Heidi, excuse
the,
me.
That's okay. The manager for school nutrition programs. And I just wanted to address Representative Hack's question around CEP and how it would be different from this bill. And that CEP doesn't have reduced price. When the school qualifies for the community eligibility program, there's only two reimbursement categories, free and paid. And so essentially for those children that would ordinarily qualify for the reduced price, they're bundled into the free reimbursement, and the federal government is picking up that 40 cents at the CEP sites. And so this bill would be directed at those schools that have less than 40% SNAP participation and would not be eligible for CEP, but still have reduced price eligible children. And so it goes directly to helping those households that are on the cusp economically.
Great. Good explanation. Just answer your question.
Yes.
So it's kind of this good news, bad news. The good news is the government will pick it up. The bad news is it's because you're 40% SNAP. So anyway. Okay. Any other questions or comments before we close the hearing? Okay. So I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2545 and opening a public hearing on House Bill 2846. Again, if you could read what it is, please.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2846 provides that 5 minutes spent by students consuming breakfast is to be considered instructional time in certain circumstances. It declares an emergency effective 1st of July 2015. The committee has been asked to consider one amendment, the Dash 1 amendments, which changes 5 minutes to 15 minutes.
Mr. Frederick, would you like to take over the gavel just for a moment?
Sure.
Again, this is one of my bills. I want to do an explanation of it. I'll save a couple of seconds by staying up here. And what this is this is the breakfast after the bell bill. And what the problem is we know that, you know, one in four kids face a risk in hunger. Many don't eat breakfast and so on and so forth. There are many schools that have what they call breakfast after the bill. And basically what it is, in the school that we went to, the kids walk in, either everybody goes to the cafeteria, but more with this, with breakfast after the bill, the kids walk in, they pick up their fruit, they pick up their biscuit, they go to the classroom, and that's where they eat. And they, in the schools that I've been to, and it's usually the little ones, as they'll come in and they'll, you know, grab their food, they'll go in, they'll sit at their desk, they get their little portfolio out, they open it up, they start doing whatever second graders do in their little portfolios, and the teacher's taking roll and so on. And so I taught high school, so I don't know what the second graders do. So anyway, so they would go through and do that. But it is very, very unclear as to whether this is instruction time, and it's pretty much determined that this is not considered instruction time. So the bill that we initially had was that 5 minutes of breakfast after the bill would be considered instruction time. The Oregon Department of Ed actually came back to us and said, do you want to make it 15 minutes? And we said, sure. And so that's what the amendment is to change 5 minutes to 15. But I think the most important thing about this is that districts want to do the right thing, and obviously through the testimony that you had of these folks, they definitely want to do the right thing, but it's very uncomfortable when, with all of the publicity about kids aren't in school enough, we don't have enough instruction time, this shouldn't be instruction time, this shouldn't, that they almost need to have this as something that will be set, be part of the rules, that yes, this would be instruction time. And it's not that the kids are sitting up there coming and getting their breakfast, putting their feet up on the desk and, talking about the football game the night before. It really is instruction time, and every time we have seen this, the kids are working. But the idea of them being able to walk in the classroom, and the custodians don't always like it because they're a little messy sometimes, although they clean up after themselves, to be able to have something in their stomachs as the day goes is something important. But it was critical to a lot of school districts that this be counted as instruction time. Representative Wilson.
Okay. Chair Doherty, thank you. I'm falling behind in the lesson here and need to ask, what difference does it matter? Not being an educator, I'm not sure what it being instruction time versus not matters.
Well, I will give you the education issue. A lot of times the things we do that are not considered instruction really are instruction. And so what it is the, it's the idea that you've got seat time. In other words, if I've got secondary children, students, that they're supposed to be in social studies X amount of minutes a day, or they're supposed to be in class X amount of minutes a day. And we don't count fire drills, we don't count assemblies, we don't count late starts where teachers would get together to collaborate. We don't count that as instruction time, which means we have to add a day or whatever. The problem lately in schools has been they've had furlough days. So what used to, and people don't get paid for those, so they're used to that is also cutting back on instruction time. So it's kind of this pressure of we have to be in there to instruct the students all the time, and it's that definition of instruction. And maybe Susan, Representative McLean, could add to that.
Well, my understanding of what you're saying and my experience, and so if this is correct, let me know, and maybe it'll help, is the fact that sometimes you have programs that are before school hours, and that's in the cafeteria.
Yep.
Sometimes with especially little ones and bus schedules, you don't get them there until the bell rings and you're going to take them into the classroom to start the school day.
Thank you.
So what the principals and the superintendents and the districts want to make sure is if we give breakfast to them in the classroom, are you going to tell me I've got to knock off 5, 10, 15 minutes of them being there for instruction? And what our chair pointed out is the kids can eat their pear, or they can eat their muffin, and they can still be reading the story, or they can still be writing. You know, in high school, we're lucky enough that there are kids that can't afford, and sometimes they bring their own lunch, and it's because, they have something small to bring with them, and so we make choices. Do you get to eat it in the classroom while you're learning, or do you have to wait until passing time?
Excellent, great explanation. So that's what it is. Some of the kids don't get there until the bell. So.
Does this bill require the teacher to allow the kids to eat that 5 or 15 minutes in a class?
Does it require them? No.
Okay. The reason I'm asking is you see so many computers that maybe...
No, it's not a mandate. And okay. So what it is if you've got a program where the kids are going in and eating after the bell, that time would be included in instruction time. But there's no mandate that...
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Judy, and then we have some other folks to speak.
So it is optional? So it's up to the teacher to decide?
No, what it is it would be the district would that go through, and if they have a program and they have programs in place now where the children walk in, they grab their food, and they eat in the classroom after the day has begun.
Okay.
Because usually the buses come right in, they drop the kids off, the kids go right into their classroom. So they're not here before school. The programs that are before school would not avail themselves of this. Okay. Any other questions on the bill? Okay. We have a few folks. Did I open this? Yes, I did. Okay. We have two panels of folks, Asta Garman, Heidi Dupuy, and Joyce Doherty. And then after that, we'll have Cassandra Griffith, Morgan Allen, and Patty Whitney White. And we need to be out of here by 9:45 for the next committee. Please. Pardon? Okay, we'll cross. Yeah. Ms. Doherty, we crossed you off. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
Chair Doherty and the committee, I'm Heidi Dupuy, the manager for school nutrition programs, and I want to speak to House Bill 2846. The agency is neutral on the bill for the Dash 1 amendment, which increases the time to 15 minutes. This is consistent with high-quality breakfast after the bell programs, which usually allow 10 to 15 minutes to eat. And looking at our current data around school breakfast program, school programs that offer breakfast before the bell, they are feeding 20% of their student population. Programs that offer breakfast after the bell are feeding 56% of their student population. So anything that we can do to encourage schools to have breakfast after the bell will bring better nutrition into children so that they're ready to learn in the classroom, as well as dollars into the program so that they can be self-supporting.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Chair Doherty and committee members, my name is Asta Garman, and I'm a program manager in Portland Public Schools Nutrition Services. I'm here in support of House Bill 2846, which would mandate that all schools with a 25% free or reduced price student population offer breakfast after the bell. It would also allow the additional 5 or 15 minute for instructional time during breakfast. Breakfast is one of the most important meals of the day, but especially if you're a growing child. Children who eat breakfast perform better on exams, have better attendance, have fewer discipline issues, and visit the school nurse less frequently than students who do not eat breakfast. This would allow Portland Public Schools to offer breakfast after the bell to a total of 30,000 students. In schools where we've been able to offer breakfast after the bell, we see a huge increase in participation. 85 to 90% of the students in the school eat breakfast with us. As a nutrition professional working in schools, I've seen how breakfast in the classroom removes the stigma of eating school food. It creates a class activity that everyone is free to participate in and helps students bond as they share a meal together before starting their lessons. I'd like to share a little bit about one school in particular in our district, Fabian. Mm-hmm. Fabian serves just over 500 students from pre-kindergarten through eighth grade. Yeah. It's located in Northeast Portland, with over half of the students there qualifying for free or reduced price lunch. When breakfast was before the bell, most of the students who rode the bus weren't able to participate in the program and get breakfast because the bus would pull up as the bell was ringing, they were cleaning up breakfast, and they would go straight into class. The main office had their hands full with kids coming in with stomach aches, headaches, and generally being disruptive in class. After we were able to offer breakfast after the bell, we had a lot less students visiting the office in the late morning. Students were able to concentrate on learning, and teachers were able to teach. But it's not only school nutrition professionals who believe that breakfast after the bell is what is best for students. A number of professional organizations also support breakfast after the bell, including the American Association of School Administrators, the National Association of Elementary School Principal Foundation, the AASA Association of Superintendents, and the National Education Association. But let's be honest, House Bill 2846 is not about what's best for the adults in the building. It's about making sure that our future generation is well-nourished and ready to learn. Thank you for your time and consideration of my remarks.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for the panelists? Representative,
I have to at least say something. Fabian is in my district. You're going to be hearing a lot about Fabian in the future here, because we have an extraordinary partnership that's being set up, because Concordia University and Fabian are going to be working together and merging, and we'll be building a new school, we hope, for Fabian that will be connected to Concordia University.
Excellent. Okay. Any other questions?
As far as the food, Chair Doherty, thank you. As far as the food that's prepared normally for breakfast, or if they start eating in the classroom, is it the same, or would it be kind of a neater, like a breakfast burrito or something like that?
Well, what I've seen usually, I mean, you could answer that. It's usually a milk or a juice, because there's certain standards by the federal government they have to do, and it could be everything from I've seen the energy bars to the the peanut butter and jelly kind of thing. It's it. But I think you can give more examples of what kind of foods they have.
I can say that in Portland, we're very concerned about equity and are offering the same meal to all students across the district. So we offer the same menu. The one slight difference with breakfast is cold cereal is offered in schools where students come through the line, and mainly that's a cleanliness issue. Mm-hmm. As the chair said, there's issues with kids spilling milk in the classroom and spoilage and stuff like that.
But an example of what they would pick up for breakfast.
For example, we have new this year, a tortilla with egg and cheese in it. We have waffles, which are highly popular with the students. So it is a hot breakfast. With it, they get a milk and a full cup serving of fruit. So dried cranberries is a pretty popular one this year. Things that are easy for them to carry into their classroom and isn't going to make too much of a mess. So,
okay, any other questions? Thank you very much. And really quickly, we have Cassandra Griffith, Morgan Allen, and Patty Whitney Wise. Just to add something, you got a minute. And I'm serious, we have to be out of here at 2:45.
Right.
We have another committee coming in. Go ahead and start.
Cassandra Griffin, Upstream Public Health again, and I am really just reiterating the points that I made on the prior bill, that the more we can do to support our kids in having full tummies, the better they will be able to succeed, become the innovators, the job creators, and the legislators of tomorrow. So they will make Oregon stronger, healthier, and more equitable if we can provide food to all of the hungry kids so they can learn and get ahead.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Morgan Allen, Oregon School Boards Association. We're supportive of the bill, and to just answer Representative Wilson's question directly, if that amendment is not in the bill, you'd have to add 7 school days to your calendar essentially at the end of the year, because you'd lose 15 minutes every day. So you do some simple math, 170 days, 15 minutes a day. You'd have to tack on 7 days at the end of your calendar in order to meet the state minimum. So it's critical that that's in there. So we appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Patty Whitney Wise, Partners for Hunger Free Oregon. We're also in support, and some teachers are really creative with those breakfast times and do some nutrition education during that time. It's been very well accepted.
Okay, very good. We have no one else signed up, so I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2846. We are going to carry over House Bill 2404. If folks who have signed up to testify would prefer to submit written testimony, committee staff will make that part of the record and will make it available on OLIS. So we're going to be carrying that over. Date, we don't know. One piece of business I have asked Representative Reardon, since CTEs, the career technology, is a very big part of education, and he is on the committee that deals with that, and we will too. I've asked him to be our liaison for CTE. Just want to let you guys know. Anything else for the good of the order? Okay, then I. Anything else for the good of the order? Okay, then I.